Thank you so much, Pastor. And you guys are very blessed to have a pastor who's, people have heard him sing all over the country, right? Man, yeah, you can tell. Man, thank you for developing that gift. What a blessing that is. And to have such God-honoring music at the beginning of the service, what a blessing that is. Such a blessing to be in the house of God on a Sunday morning so that we, you know, I always enjoy meeting brothers and sisters around the world in Christ. And let's see, everybody should have one of these. And if you would, grab a card on the way out. And then also, every family gets one of each video. One is a video, this How to Win the Culture War. That's three talks on there. Two of them are motivational, so it doesn't get old. I mean, it doesn't get outdated. And one of them is actually at Florida State, Florida State College. Yeah, so that's there. And then there's this other one called Revival of Truth. And a pastor in Wisconsin asked me to do a creation science revival. Three talks Sunday plus Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday evenings. And I said, how about we do a creation Sunday, and then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, we'll do a revival of truth that's been censored. And his credit, and I said, you know, Monday, we could do behind the vaccine curtain, listen to some vaccine experts testifying under oath, and that's before COVID. And then Tuesday, we can look at the COVID corruption, and then Wednesday, we can look at what the globalists have in store for us. And to his credit, he said, yeah, let's do that. And so this video here is Monday night's talk, where you can see some, again, vaccine experts testifying under oath, and then you can see the rest of them on Rumble, go into the Revival of Truth Rumble channel because they get censored on YouTube. And I'm a big proponent of free speech, and we need to get all the information to make informed decisions, and we're not getting it in our government schools, media, museums, and even some churches. So that's what I try to do. I got a ministry called Solidify Your Faith. The website is solidifyyourfaith.weebly.com. And my brother asked me, hey, what does Weebly mean? And I said, it means I'm cheap. That saves me hundreds of dollars a year, okay? So that's money I can use where God wants me to do. And on my business card, be ready always to give an answer, is what it says. This is, comes from 1 Peter 3:15. You know, but sanctify the Lord God in your hearts and be ready always to give an answer to every man that asks you what the reason of the hope that's in you with meekness and fear. I got to work on that meekness and fear thing. But I like to give them an answer. Oh, and by the way, that part about Jesus looked at the multitude and he was moved on compassion, that's a soft spot. If you look at my cell phone, that's what's written on the back of my cell phone. And it's because that's the message that turned my life around or really motivated me. And my pastor gave a talk called When God's Desires Become Your Desires. And he said, you know, Jesus looked at the multitude and he was moved with compassion because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And right then it resonated, St. Cloud State University. They're like sheep without a shepherd. Someone's got to reach them. So that was the message that kind of started me, springboarded me down the thing. And I do spend a lot of time at St. Cloud. You know, I'm ready with an answer, but nobody's asking me the questions. Okay, so I go to where they think they have the answers, and I'll ask them questions like, hey, how did people get here? Blind chance or creation? You know, and at St. Cloud State, most people think we were created, you know, and they'd like to think you're just an oddball, but no, we're the majority in America. You go into Gallup poll 2024 and search evolution versus creation, and the creationists are on top at about 40%. It's been that way since the 80s. You know, the 40% of Americans believe that God made man in his present form less than 10,000 years ago. And that's in spite of all the billions and trillions of dollars that they've pushed it on us in our museums and our government schools. But people aren't buying it. You know, and at the bottom, it's atheistic evolution. You know, man got here without God over millions of years. And in the 80s, it was about 10%, 1 in 10 people. Now it's about 25%. Okay, that's growing fast. And in the last 12 years, the creationists have lost 9% and the atheists have gained 9%. So if that continues, we're going to be the minority. So we have to do whatever it takes to make sure it does not continue. And just think, you know, if it's going to be, it's up to me. You know, it's up to the man in the mirror. You know, just think, if everybody did what you're doing, would anything change? Okay, encourage people to do a little bit more. We don't have to do everything, but everybody can do something because we don't want to be the minority. And why do we do this? You know, there's eternity at stake. You know, if people don't believe God and the Bible, they reject Jesus and they'll end up in hell. And one of the main lies of Satan is evolution. And we'll get into that in a little bit. Another question I asked is, how did life begin? Somehow or God? because that's what their textbook says somehow. But again, most people at St. Cloud State believe that, believe in God, you know? And so I really had to be ready to give an answer when I debated a science teacher. And you can see this on my YouTube channel also. There's a YouTube channel called Standing for Truth, where they have a whole bunch of debates, and he's really good. The best part about the debate is you can't tell, is the moderator. You know, you can't tell what side he's on. And on this one, he let us go off the rails and go back and forth at each other, and sometimes he would rein us in. But yeah, that was a rather interesting one. And then just a week ago, Friday, that was at St. Cloud State, and I was talking to an atheist, non-binary person, and we're having this discussion. And one of the things that they really, really struggle with is, how do you determine right and wrong? Okay, how do you do that? And so I asked, and I meet atheists there all the time. You know, sometimes they'll come up and say, what are you doing here? And sometimes they'll say, I just want to give you an opportunity to think. You need to see both sides if you want to think, and that's not happening in your class. You're just getting a blind chance perspective of the past rammed down your throat. That's like thinking this watch got to get together by blind chance. That'd be absurd, right? How much more absurd to think our bodies got put together by chance? And then you can see their wheels start turning, you know? And another time, this was last fall, a psychology major or psych major came up and asked me, you know what I'm doing here? And I said, hey, if you saw a blind person walking towards a cliff, would you warn them? And he said, yeah, absolutely. And I said, well, that's what I see. I see a lot of people who are blinded and they're walking towards a cliff. And if they go off that cliff without Jesus, they're going to spend an eternity in hell. And I don't want that. And God doesn't want that. And so that's why I'm here. You know, they can choose to go off that cliff without Jesus, but they're going to have to walk by me first. I got a big, you know, reconsider this. And so I'm there. And so I'm at the college and I'm talking to this atheist. And it reminds me of this verse, Proverbs 26:5. Answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own conceit. Okay, a fool has said in his heart, there is no God. Okay, that's foolish to think that. And that's what she says, there is no God. And I say, okay, if there's no God, we'll play in your ballpark. How did life begin? They can't answer it. They think they have it figured out, but they don't. There's $10 million on the table. All you have to do is show how DNA got inside a cell and self-organized and replicated. $10 million. They used to have $1 million for the origin of life, but that nobody could do it. And so they can't do it. And it's like, well, if you don't know how life began, how do you know God didn't do it? You know? And so, but, you know, I believe in science. Well, we'll get to that. Science is observable and testable. We don't observe life coming from non-life. We don't observe bacteria turning into blue whales. Those are all belief systems about the past. So I'm trying to change the discussion from, you know, science versus religion to blind chance versus creation. That's what it's really all about. And I don't have enough faith to believe blind chance brought us all here. Okay, and you can believe it if you want, but it's definitely not science. And I'm talking to that girl and I said, you know, how do you determine right and wrong? You know, and she said, the person decides. And I said, well, Jeffrey Dahmer decided it was right to kill people and eat them. Was he right? And she goes, no, he was wrong. And I said, why was he wrong? He chose that. Well, he killed someone. And I said, well, why is killing wrong? And he says, because it takes a life. And I said, so you'd be opposed to killing babies, right? Oh, no, you know, those aren't alive, you know? And so, you know, she says, they're not alive. And I said, well, if they're not alive, why are they growing? And she says, well, it's like that tree over there. That tree's growing. And I said, well, that tree doesn't have a heartbeat or brain waves. There's a difference. And she said, well, the baby's just a clump of cells. You know, I should have said, well, you're just a clump of cells, too. You know, and she didn't believe she had a soul or a spirit. She just believed she was matter and energy. You know, so basically she swallowed that evolution paradigm that she's a mutated animal. And sometimes I'll have that question at St. Cloud State. What are you? A, made in God's image. B, mutated animal. You know, and that's another talk for another time. But so I'm talking with her, and when we get back onto it, and it's like, well, you know, how do you determine right and wrong? And she said, well, killing is wrong. And I said, why is it wrong? You know, and I said, if evolution, she says, you're arguing that that it's okay to kill? I said, no, I'm holding up your worldview to be critiqued. Is it logically consistent? You know, if evolution is true, why is killing wrong? Because animals kill animals all the time. And that's when, you know, and she said, what do you mean? It's like, yeah, if we're just animals, what's wrong with animals killing animals? And that's when she said something and, you know, and said, I gotta leave, and then swore at me. And then she left. And she wasn't real happy when she left. I saw her the other day, too. She wasn't real happy. Because she has to look at her worldview and try and figure out how life, you know, what's right and wrong. And this is basically how it goes. The person decides, so I throw up Jeffrey Dahmer. And then they'll say, well, the laws, you know, the laws, he did something illegal. Well, you know, the Supreme Court said it was okay to own slaves years ago. They can be wrong. In Nazi Germany, they determined that Jews were non-persons, so they could kill them without committing murder. So laws can be wrong. And they say, well, society says it's wrong. Well, again, in Germany, they thought it was okay to get rid of the useless eaters, you know? And I should have asked that atheist, hey, if they come and lock you up sometime and throw you in that concentration camp, how are you gonna argue against it? How are you gonna argue that your life is worth saving if you're just a bunch of chemicals? See, from my perspective, you're made in the image of God, and God says don't kill, so therefore they shouldn't kill you, okay? But what, from your perspective, how are you gonna argue against that? You know, if the majority decides, and the majority has been wrong a lot, and that's what this battle is all about. And so that's basically where it goes. And I've talked for hours after one of my talks. You know, this guy was a sincere atheist, and we talked for hours. And then they shut down Atwood at midnight. You know, we had to leave. But yeah, they have a real hard time determining what's right and wrong from without the Bible. And that's another discussion that we've had. Yeah, the Bible. But anyhow. Okay, so answer a fool according to his folly. Play in their ballpark and show them what an absurd worldview it is. It's like Bob Enyart said, you know, they live in a constant state of hypocrisy. And they do. It's logically incoherent. And my pastor right now, he's saying that all the atheist arguments are emotional. They're not logical. And so, anyhow. So then, also Colossians 2:8. Beware lest any man spoil you through philosophy and vain deceit, after the tradition of man, after the rudiments of the world, and not after Christ. So the Bible is warning us that somebody may spoil you, that's rob you. They can rob you for the joy that God has for you, they rob you of an eternal salvation, you know, rob you of, you know, the best in life by following Satan's lies. Through what? Philosophy. Philo-anosophy, that's lover of wisdom. Yeah, that's, and, you know, professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. And so I wonder if that's why they call them professors at universities. Yeah, they became fools when they thought they were so smart. And then vain deceit, that's empty lies. That's evolution, empty lies. And as a taxpayer, it bothers me that they're taking my money to teach kids that blind chance perspective. And that's all they get to see. You know, if you're going to teach a belief system about the past, show them the creation perspective too. And if you're not, I'd say just teach science. This one college, a student invited me to class. I thought I was going to a club. He said, be here at such and such a time. And so I was there, and the professor was there, and he says, yeah, I heard you were coming. You got 15 minutes once the students get here. And I was done in 10 minutes, and any questions? And the professor said, well, if you were a king of science for a day, what would you do? And I said, I'd put all the theories on the table, and I'd focus on the ones that make accurate predictions. And I wouldn't teach belief systems about the past, like the Big Bang and evolution. We would just teach science. But that's another story too. Okay, in Ephesians 5:8, and have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them. Okay, what do we reprove? What does that mean? You go into blueletterbible.org and you can do the word search and the tools and look up the Greek. And it says, to show one his fault, demand an explanation. So that's what we're supposed to be doing with the unfruitful works of darkness. And evolution in the Big Bang is a big unfruitful work of darkness. I've got some books on the table there, how most of the, you know, 60-some percent of kids that go to churches stop going to church once they leave home. So Ken Ham did a survey, and he said, okay, why? And it turned out that it was mainly because they doubted the Bible. And so then they asked, well, when? When did you start to doubt the Bible? And the majority of the times it was junior high and high school, and not coincidentally, at least in Minnesota, 8th grade earth science, 10th grade biology, that's when they're getting the Big Bang and evolution rammed down their throat without an alternative perspective. It's like that saying, beware of one hand clapping, because there's two sides to every story. But if you only hear one side over and over and over again, it's probably because the truth is being censored by those who can do it. And I was talking to a science instructor at a community college in another state, and he taught biology, and he says he always has his students have a journal of fuzzy words, like somehow, could have been, theorized, possibly, even millions of years or billions of years. We didn't see that happen. Science is observable and testable. And so that way the student knows when they're being taught science and when they're being taught a belief system. Okay, science is observable, testable, I like it. And they say, well, how can you believe in a young earth and still use a cell phone and a computer? You know, two different things. Okay, this is observable, testable, repeatable. You know, but blind chance isn't. So yeah, so then I had a debate with an evolutionist, another one, and that one, yeah, it's interesting to see their perspective, and you need to see all the information to make informed decisions. Okay, so now you've got your sheet, and this is kind of the cliff notes of the debate I had with this science teacher. Okay, and yeah, I'll just kind of lay, this is my opening statement to this science teacher. During the debate, I had 12 minutes to set the stage, and I said, okay, let's define the terms. According to this science textbook that I'm paying for in St. Cloud, it says, the National Academy of Sciences defines science as the use of evidence to construct testable explanations and predictions of natural phenomena. So the key word there is testable. If it's not testable, it's not science. And then evolution. From the same curriculum, it says all the life on Earth is related to a common ancestor that existed about 3.8 billion years ago. This process is called evolution. This process is also called not science. We can't observe that. We can't test that. We all came from a bacteria. Are you kidding me? I don't believe that at all. And somebody asked Richard Dawkins, say, what mechanism adds information to the genome? And he was silent for about 20 seconds. That's a very uncomfortable time frame to wait during an interview. And then he finally said, stop recording. Okay, they don't have a mechanism to add information to the genome. It's like if this was the instruction manual to make a skateboard, and if it was, you know, a book of this, or even this. If this, oh, and by the way, the hydroplate theory, those who missed Sunday school, you don't know why you're smarter than Minnesotans. And you don't know how somebody overcame diabetes. And you don't know about how the flood thing, but I'm going to leave this with you, Pastor. This is good. This is a proofreading copy. It's not available for whatever reason. But just imagine this was how you make a skateboard. And all you could, instructions, and all you could do is misspell words, copy and paste, you know, rip a page out here, put a page in there. Is that process going to turn that skateboard into the space shuttle? No, that's absurd. But that's the process that turns a single living cell into all the plants and animals and people that have ever lived. I mean, that takes way more faith, way more faith. Okay, the next thing, so we got science, we got evolution. Okay, we need to separate the facts from the conclusions. This is from a college textbook. A fact is a verifiable piece of information, so a fact is verifiable. Whereas a conclusion is a judgment based upon the facts. And then this is the ultimate pot calling the kettle black statement I've ever seen. The news media often mix facts with conclusion without indicating which is which. Well, so does the science book. You know, the fact is that Grand Canyon, a twisting 1 mile long, or deep, 400 mile long canyon. So that's a fact. There's Grand Canyon. That's how long it is. That's how deep it is. And then in the same sentence, they mix their conclusion in with it. It formed during some 6 million years of geological activity, erosion by the Colorado Platte River. That's the conclusion. That's not a fact. And that's over and over and over again. And I was supposed to debate somebody on the Grand Canyon, and he chickened out. And now there's another guy who's looking at it. But yeah, there's no way that river carved that canyon. No way. Okay, and also this one. You know, it talks about she found blood vessels and red blood cells in this Triceratops horn, or Triceratops femur. Okay, oh, let's read the whole thing. Paleontologist Mary Schweitzer, oh yeah, but who knew they found dinosaur blood and dinosaur bones? Who knew that? One? Wow, two? Three? Like less than 5%. Okay, that's the find of the century about 20 years ago now. It shows that dinosaur bones aren't millions of years old. Blood cells can't last millions of years, and that's why you haven't heard about it. Okay, but this is what this says in NOVA. Paleontologist Mary Schweitzer has defied the long-held belief that it is fruitless to search for preserved soft tissue in dinosaur remains. Yeah, because they can't last that long. Most experts thought that such structures would have decayed and vanished long ago. That's true. But Schweitzer has found evidence of delicate structures such as blood vessels and red blood cells. That's all facts right there. She found it. And then they throw the conclusion in there that have survived millions of years. No, it's not. That's how about my conclusion. She found red blood vessels and red blood cells that indicates that dinosaurs did not live millions of years ago. That's another conclusion. Okay, and then you need to understand high confidence science and low confidence science. High confidence is repeatable, it's observable, it's got a prospective study, it's careful to avoid bias. That's what blind tests are for, so nobody knows what they're testing. And careful to avoid assumptions and reasonable claims. That's high confidence science, and that's not evolution or the Big Bang. That's low confidence. That can't be repeated, nobody witnessed the actual event, retrospective study, clear opportunities for bias, and the biggest bias out there is only our theory is allowed. That's it. Blind chance perspective. That's the only theory in the book. Talk about bias. Well, yeah, your horse comes in first place when you don't let any other horses run. I think it's time to let the children think. Let them see both sides so they can come to their own conclusion. That's what critical thinking is, but it's not happening in our schools and sometimes not even our churches. We need to get people all the information, make them an informed decision, and then a clear opportunity for bias. And also, they don't do blind tests. Bob Enyart, you know, Mary Schweitzer, she found those blood cells. Her boss was Jack Horner. She had to do that test 17 times before she believed it. And then she showed it to her boss, Jack, and she said, I found red blood cells. And he said, can you prove they're not red blood cells? He knew what would happen. And so then Bob Enyart from Real Science Radio, one of my heroes, he calls up Jack and says, hey, I'll give you $20,000 if you carbon date that bone. And he says, well, we won't expect to find carbon-14 in there because the bone's so old. And that's right. You can only get C14 to about 100,000 years. But Bob says, yeah, I know. But we wouldn't expect to find blood cells in there either now, would we? And they him and Hoffer, you know, and then finally says, no, that's not going to help. It's like, help what, Jack? Education and science? You go wherever the evidence leads? Or indoctrination, where you just give one perspective? And you can hear that on Real Science Radio. It's a neat conversation. And so high confidence, this is how fast does an object fall? You can test it, you can repeat it, there's no bias there. How about do humans and bacteria share genes from a common ancestor? Again, low confidence. And I would submit it's not even science. And this guy, he gave this talk at, this is a good website too, it's on your sheet, I wrote it in, on YouTube, TCCSA, you can go to the shorts, that's where the highlights of the speakers are, and that's Rob Stadler. And it's a creation library. The playlists are broken into topics, geology, biology, astronomy, history, you know, physics. And so then you can see what a creationist perspective is there, because you aren't going to get that in a government school. And so basically everybody believes in miracles, even blind chancers and creationists. We all have to explain where matter came from. Violates the first law of thermodynamics. That's what a miracle is. A miracle violates laws of physics. Matter from nothing, the Big Bang, violates laws of physics. Order from chaos violates the second law, okay? And then life from non-life, that's the law of biogenesis. Life only comes from life. And then immaterial ideas from matter. Einstein said that this is a gulf that's unbridgeable, so they call it Einstein's gulf. And then consciousness from matter. And I haven't even seen anybody attempt to try to explain this one. So those are big miracles. I got a miracle maker, and they don't. So they have to believe laws of physics don't work to get their worldview. There was one time I was given a talk, and I said, you know, if evolution's true, your brain's just a bag of chemicals. You know, just got their bag of random chemicals. How can you trust those thoughts? And somebody else, perfect, and he storms out of the room. You know, he doesn't like his worldview questioned, but for their sake, we need to make him question it. Okay, so how did life begin? Blind chance or creation? And this is a textbook that they have at St. Cloud State, a college textbook. To the best of our knowledge, it should say to the best of our blind chance knowledge. You know, they aren't allowing for a creator. Somehow, despite the harsh environment, living organisms appeared. Somehow it's not science. So that would be a big word in that fuzzy word journal, somehow. So this is clearly a belief system, and it rained on the rock for millions of years. We came from rock. That's what they're saying. And I don't have enough faith to believe that. And then this is the $10 million offer going to evo2.org. $10 million, just answer the largest mystery in history, how genetic code inside cells got there and how cells intentionally self-organize, communicate, and then purposely adapt. And so this was part of my opening statement, and I showed this to the evolutionists and said, does this get together by blind chance? Ooh, wait a minute. Maybe I have to turn this on. I'm sorry. Pilot error here. We'll try that again. You get your money's worth.
From the outside, as it spits out the messenger RNA transcript. Next, this RNA transcript approaches and passes through a molecular machine called the nuclear pore complex, an information recognition device that controls the flow of information in and out of the cell's nucleus. Now we see the genetic assembly instructions on the messenger RNA approaching and arriving at a two-part chemical factory called a ribosome, the site of protein synthesis.
As the messenger RNA... And it just goes on and on. Does that look like blind chance? All these molecular machines doing what they're supposed to inside of our cells without even us knowing it. And you can see this on YouTube under Discovery Science, and under their playlist is Molecular Machines. Just astounding. Yeah, so did that come from blind chance? Man, I don't have enough faith to believe that. But they'll say, oh, you know, there's so many planets and so many possibilities. Of course it happened, and it just had to happen here. And it's like, okay, with that type of thinking, do you think when you take your clothes out of the dryer someday they're going to be all folded and the socks are matched up? You believe that? It's just absurd. This is Kinesin.
Cells are full of specialized components that perform functions vital to their existence. But how do these components get to the right locations inside the cell to perform their functions? For larger components, a transportation system is needed. Meet the Kinesin. Masterpieces of microengineering, Kinesins are miniature motorized machines that carry cargo from one part of the cell to another, walking along self-assembling highways called microtubules.
And I saw that and I thought, how do those microtubules know where to go? And my son saw it and he said, well, where do they get the energy to move? And that brings us, and again, did that get together by chance? No, I don't think so. But how'd they get the energy? ATP synthase.
ATP synthase is a high-tech micromolecular power generator inside the cells of your body. It generates adenosine triphosphate, or ATP, an energy molecule that provides fuel that every one of your cells needs to function. Without this fuel, your cells will cease operation, and so will you.
Did you catch that? Without that energy, you're going to die, and so will your cells. Okay, so how did we live before that evolved? And so, I mean, just look at this molecular machine.
ATP synthase machine has many parts we recognize from human-designed technology. A rotor, a stator, a drive shaft, and other basic components of a rotary engine. The ATP synthase is one of thousands of elegantly designed molecular machines inside your cells that make your life and all known life possible.
Yeah. So is that blind chance or creation? That's screaming loudly for a creator. All this incredible design, our DNA is good information going bad with mutations. How did it get good in the beginning? The whole universe is winding down. Who wound it up? You know, everything we see shows it's falling apart, not getting put together. And just to, that was Discover Science, and this just shows how fast ATP is moving.
It doesn't look all that complicated until you realize it looks more like this. And this is slowed down by more than tenfold. And the cell membrane is so densely packed with these machines, they effectively make the entire surface of the membrane.
Yeah, and I was having, and this is on your sheet too. This is the second one at the top, long story short. You can see how a cell is so complex, and they're kind of humorous too. And I was having lunch with, eating lunch, and there was a professor across the table, and I said, you ever heard of these long story short videos? And he said, yeah, I write the script. Yeah, it's like, wow, we got a celebrity here. So did that come together by chance or blind chance or creation? That's what you got to keep asking them. You know, it's absurd to think a building had a builder, a painting had a painter, but a creation didn't have a creator. And we'll get into some of those. And then I gave this talk last month at the University of Northwestern in St. Paul. This is Errors in Our Science Textbooks. I pointed them out, had access to their online textbooks. I pointed out a whole bunch of errors to the curriculum director, and she said, we're just teaching the state standards. And I said, what standard says we're 1.6% different from chimpanzees? And I didn't hear from her, but the superintendent emailed me saying they contacted a law firm in their response. It's like, why do you contact a law firm instead of the publisher to get these errors cleaned up? So I went to the school board to see if they'd do anything about it. And it was, and you can, my neighbor My neighbor videoed these. You can see it on my YouTube channel. Yeah, make sure you grab one of these cards. There's a playlist just for the school board. And I even got to wish them a Merry Christmas. And I said, Jesus also said if you cause one of these little ones to stumble, it'd be better if a millstone were hung around your neck and you'd be cast into the depths of the sea. So that's a pretty sobering thought for anybody who believes in Jesus. And if you're teaching some false ideas, I think we'd better, at least if you're going to teach, just teach science and just observable and testable stuff in science. Don't teach belief systems about the past, especially when it goes against what God says. And, Jesus said in Mark 10:6, but from the beginning of the creation, God made them male and female. The beginning, not millions of years later. And so if we're teaching kids stuff that's contrary to what God said, I don't know. But anyhow, so that's their school board's going to have to deal with that. Okay, and then this is our school district. In Minnesota, half the kids can't read or do science or math at the state standard. And in St. Cloud, it's only 1 in 4 can do math or science, and only 1 in 3 can read. But we got Superintendent of the Year for some reason. Just odd how that works. But their answer is AI technology. And for sake of time, you can see this on my YouTube channel, but basically he asks ChatGPT, and this is from Answers in Genesis Canada. He asks ChatGPT, or he says, only use observable science, mathematical probability, and strict logic in answering these questions. What is the chance of life forming from nothing? A protein forming. It was impossible. How does life evolve? It's impossible. And then he said, okay, treat me like a first-time user. Okay, how did life begin? Abiogenesis, evolution, all that stuff. He said, wait a minute, you just told me that was impossible. And then Grok says, ChatGPT says, I'm programmed to give the consensus answer. And then he said, well, if consensus said that 2 + 2 = 5, what would you tell a new user? And he said, 2 + 2 = 5. So be very careful about AI. It is not our friend. And AI and Mattel, they're going to have AI toys this year, but watch out for that. It's full-blown brainwashing. So these are some of the errors I saw in the textbooks. You can see more of the detail on why they're wrong if you look at the talk on my YouTube channel. You probably figured out that water equals life. No, it doesn't. Life can reproduce. Water doesn't reproduce. And then it says that chemicals sloshing together over millions of years, that process can lead to living organisms. No, it can't. Life can't begin in water because water breaks apart the molecules faster than they get put together. It's called hydrolysis. And it says that there's only 1.6% difference between chimps and humans. And during the debate with the science teacher, I asked him, hey, which genome's bigger, the chimp or the humans? And he didn't know. And the chimpanzee has 3.3 billion base pairs, and humans have 3.1 billion. So the difference is 213 million, and that's 6.9% different. How can something that's 6.9% bigger be 1% different? And if you want to see how they got the 1.6%, listen to this.
If a genetic paragraph, thousands of letters long, appears twice in a human scroll, but only once in its chimp counterpart, should that second human copy count as thousands of changes or just one? And what about identical paragraphs that appear in both genomes, but in different places, or in reverse order, or broken up into pieces? Rather than monkey around with these difficult questions, the researchers simply excluded all the large mismatch sections, a whopping 1.3 billion letters in all, and performed a letter-by-letter comparison on the remaining 2.4 billion, which turned out to be 98.77% identical. So, yes, we share 99% of our DNA with chimps if we ignore 18% of their genome and 25% of ours. We may not actually be 99% chimp, but we are 100% great ape, and at least a little bananas.
So that's not a website. That's not a creation website. That's Minute Earth. You can check it out for yourself. So they have to manipulate the data that much to get 1.6%. They have to make things up with Haeckel's drawings, and we'll get to that. And then they talk about scientists haven't been able to come up with a working hypothesis as to why our retinas are set up backwards. They're not set up backwards. They got the cells in front of the photoreceptors, and they act like fiber optics to focus the light. And it also keeps the UV light from blinding us. So it's not, so that's false. These are Haeckel's drawings, which were false 100 years ago. But it's in our standards. State standards have to teach the similarity, even though they're false. And it's just, and this is, this is what he drew. Haeckel drew those things on top for evolution, and then they're real similar. But that middle row, that's what they actually look like. They don't look anything like each other, and they don't look anything like what he drew. and yet they're still in the textbooks. And then it says a almost complete skeleton of Lucy, and that's not, you know, he's got 200 some bones, and they only find 47. That's not almost complete. And then this one, the Earth's oldest rock was discovered in 2008 along Hudson Bay in northern Quebec. But in 2019, NASA came out and said the Earth's oldest rock was found on the moon. And if you don't know how that's happened, go ask somebody who was in Sunday school. That's the hydroplate theory. Did you live stream that one too, or no?
Yeah.
Okay, so you can go home and watch it on live stream. Then you can see why you guys are smarter than Minnesotans too. Okay, and it crystallized 12 miles below the surface. And this evolutionary tree is all false. And go into descentfromdarwin.org, and you'll see 1,200 PhDs who's, this is what they sign off on. We are skeptical of the claims of the ability of random mutation and natural selection to account for the complexity of life. Careful examination of the evidence of Darwinian theory should be encouraged. So they doubt Darwin. 1,200 PhDs and above from MIT and Princeton and UCLA and Cornell and Rutgers. And I was there was a representative, Wolgamott. No, Putnam, who's actually the husband of the superintendent that got superintendent of the year. But I was walking to him after one of his events, and I'm talking about this issue with him. And I said, and then I emailed him that. And I said, can the fact that 1,200 PhD scientists do not agree with evolution, can that fact be taught in school right after they're being taught evolution? And he didn't respond. But it's gotten so bad that they've got the thirdwayofevolution.com, because they know mutations and natural selection aren't the answer. So now they're desperately looking for a third answer, and we got it, creation, but they don't want it. And then it talks about how all these, the four limbs of different vertebrates show the similar structures derived from a common ancestor. No, it's a common designer. You know, it's got the same genes are used in bat echolocation and whale echolocation. There's not a common ancestor there, okay? And they just call it convergent evolution. But you can see this talk if you want to see more. Okay, so you saw my opening statement, you saw some errors in the textbook, and now we're going to close real quickly. I just review what I talked about before, high confidence, show them some more stuff that can't happen. But let's go to, there's some churches that don't teach creation. And the Bible clearly says, for in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that in them is, and rested the seventh day. So 6 days. And he didn't stutter. He wrote that with his own finger. If there's anything we take literally, it's that. And they'll say, well, a day could be millions of years or billions of years. Well, okay. Can plants made on day three, can they live millions of years without the sun on day four? And even if they could they live millions or billions of years without anything to pollinate them, made on day five and six? So it doesn't make sense. And then Jesus said, from the beginning of the creation, God made them male and female. Not millions of years later, not billions of years later. The beginning. So Jesus was a creationist. Not only was, he's from creation. He's a young earth creationist, too. From the beginning of the creation, Adam and Eve were there. Okay, so and Jesus is our example. If we're not following the example of Jesus, we're on real thin ice. And we really need to think about that, especially if we're teaching that to a congregation. Okay, now we come to the sheets real quickly. You know, this is the best time to be alive, I think. There's more evidence against the Big Bang and evolution than ever before. And it's more easily accessible with the side that says fun creation sources. I encourage you to go into every one of those and check out some of their videos. Some of them are only a minute long. Some are made for kids. Some are a little more edgy. And just do it for a devotion every night with your family. In a year or two, man, you're going to be pretty solid. You're going to be ready to give an answer about radiometric dating or fossils or, gravity. Yeah, then there's good websites, Real Science Radio, rsr.org. That's what I listen to 5 hours coming down here, 5 hours tomorrow going back, rsr.org. Bob Enyart interviews, if you're interested in soft tissue, just type soft tissue, and you're going to hear scientists talk about it from a creation perspective. That's the best one, I believe. Okay, and then on the back, this is Cliff Notes from my debate with an evolutionist. Okay, you got the creation perspective on top. And in my debate with the science teacher, he says, well, what points to 6,000 years? And I said, Uranus's and Neptune's magnetic field, because Dr. Russell Humphrey accurately predicted what the magnetic fields would be before anything got out there. And he based it on a 6,000-year model. And then I started to give him some more examples, and he cut me off. But what he didn't hear was he also accurately predicted the diffusion rate of helium from zircons based on a 6,000-year model. That doesn't mean anything to anybody, but he had two lines, one's billions of years and one's 6,000, and the data came perfect on 6,000. And then mutation rates. Mitochondria Eve would be a mere 6,000 years old, according to Ann Gibbons, in Science, but that she had to add something so she wouldn't lose her job. You have to bow down to evolution. And we've made accurate predictions as far as mainly based on the hydroplate theory, you know, and what they find in comets and asteroids and water under oceans, all this stuff, rounded boulders. Again, check out Sunday School and you'll know why that is. And then the blind chance perspective. Okay, just when you meet an evolutionist or an atheist, just ask them, where did matter come from? How did life begin? We don't have to back up. That puts them on the heels. They can't answer it. Okay, and then I list off the errors and the sources that you can do. But the main thing you have to realize, they have rescuing devices to prop up that blind chance perspective of the past. And it's, you know, that the Oort cloud. We still have comets that can't last millions of years. So they imagine an Oort cloud that reproduces them. Okay, and then the multiverse. Our universe is so finely tuned, it couldn't happen by chance. But if there's an infinite number of galaxies or universes out there, we just happen to be in the right one. So they imagine a multiverse. And then the dynamo, our magnetic field the half-life is 1,400 years. That can't be billions of years old. So they imagine a dynamo. And then you got spiral galaxies that should have wound up in a few million years, but we still have them. So they imagine dark matter to keep them there. And then our universe is expanding at an accelerating rate. And they can't figure it out. So they imagine dark energy, which is anti-gravity. So they imagine all these things. And dark matter plus dark energy equals 96% of the universe. You know, if your theory can only explain 4%, I think it's time for a new theory. And that's the hydroplate theory. And this will destroy the Big Bang when it gets into the mainstream. So we're just inviting you to the party. You going to be early? You be a leader? Or are you going to be late? Stamping your feet. Either way, the party's coming. I encourage you to get involved. I encourage you to start a creation club. You know, meet once every month or two and show a creation movie or talk about some of these things. And that's what we did on my YouTube channel. We meet at our public library every month. And we recorded these talks. And you can show them for your club if you want. It's called Creation Science 101. And we got up to 112 or so, and we're still moving on. And let's see, what else did they imagine? Okay, inflation, subduction, plate tectonics, that's all imagined. And then dinosaur soft tissue. They haven't imagined anything yet that can preserve it for millions of years. So they imagine they're going to imagine something. So they don't have the rescuing device. They've had bad predictions regarding vestigial organs, like our appendix and tonsils. No, they have functions. And then junk DNA, they were wrong about that. That held back science for decades. And then young galaxies, their predictions of like the Hubble Space Telescope and the James Webb Space Telescope, their predictions are always wrong. And it's such a laughing stock right now. Jason Lyle, he says, you know, your predictions about infant galaxies, young galaxies forming, and population 3 stars, you're going to be wrong. And also, once you realize you're wrong, you're gonna say that galaxies formed much. I predict you're going to say galaxies formed much sooner than expected. And he was right both times. And then if you go into, I think it was Creation Science 104 or 108, he talks about all the frauds. And there's a book out there, Haeckel's Drawings, Piltdown Man was a skull of a human, a jaw of an ape, and a Nebraska man was a tooth, and an Orsi man was a donkey skull, but people don't know that. Okay, let's wrap this up. Why do I do this? I do this so people believe that there's a creator. This creator revealed himself in the Bible, and the Bible tells us about why we're in the mess we're in, because of sin, you know, because of Adam. One sin messed it up for everyone, but one Savior helps everyone, and that's Jesus Christ. And these are the verses I use at college. You know, Romans 1:16, I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation to everyone that believes. So we need to believe the gospel to be saved. And I'll ask them, what's the gospel? Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, it's the Bible, it's the Ten Commandments. Well, the Bible defines it in 1 Corinthians 15. Moreover, brethren, I declare unto you the gospel. And then in verse 3 and 4, for I delivered unto you first of all that which also received, how that Christ died for our sins according to the scriptures, and that he was buried and that he rose again the third day according to the scriptures. We got the best news in the world. Jesus died for our sins so we can go to heaven. And it is so exciting when you help people connect the dots. And if you, sometimes they won't connect the dots until their foundation of thinking gets undermined and they start looking for answers, which leads us to the most famous verse. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believes in him should not perish but have everlasting life. And I will hand it over to Pastor Duane. You guys are in very good hands. You are very blessed.